Good morning. Make sure that's on. Take this off. Thanks, Lysander, for reading that. There's a potato retail. It's actually their warehouse. Nelson's Potato is not far from where I live. And they often have a reader board on Highway 20 there, both sides. Usually fairly humorous. One recently that's up there on one side of it is, "Friends, do not let friends eat russet potatoes." Like that one, Rich? It sounds like they're potato snobs, doesn't it? They grow reds and yellows and others and whites, but evidently not russet potatoes. And I was thinking, how can I work that into our talk this weekend? I can't think of a single way to do that. But I thought it was funny, so I thought I'd share it with you. I can't think of a single way to work it in, but I had been, for some reason, something triggered in my thoughts. This guy right here, I don't know why I was thinking of Kirk Douglas this week, but he came to mind, and I was thinking, is that guy still alive? And you know what? He is. He is still alive. Man, 102 years old. He is one of the last of Hollywood's golden age of film. And I was reading a little bit about him. He's got some quotes about John Wayne. He and John Wayne did about four movies together. And he said, John was a Republican, I was a Democrat, so we argued all the time. He must have meant in between scenes and all that kind of thing. So that's something that he remembered. What is Kirk Douglas's legacy? What's he going to be remembered for? His cleft chin. What else, Mo? His chin, yeah. What else, Ted?
Spartacus.
So his films. He's got a film legacy. And legacy is a term that's quite popular right now. People ask one another, what's going to be your legacy? What's your legacy? What's going to be in your tombstone when you die? Those kind of things. Kind of popular to think about right now. Our focus out of Psalm 90 is actually verse 17, the last verse there. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us and give permanence to the work of our hands. Yes, give permanence to the work of our hands. That's the New American, actually the New American in the footnote, in the side margin. It says confirm the work of our hands. Other translations say establish the work of our hands, and we're going to use give permanence to the work of our hands. The entire 90th Psalm is actually worth the 5 minutes. I don't even think it took Lysander that long to read. 5 minutes is about how long life is, isn't it, compared to eternity. It's very short. This entire Psalm is dedicated to the brevity of life and the importance of numbering our days. You notice that the ancient text tells us that this is a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Isn't that interesting? This is a prayer of Moses, the man of God. And in verse 17 is the culmination of this message up here, the brevity of life and numbering our days. It culminates in this, two requests. He's requesting the Lord's favor, number one. And number two, please give permanence or confirm or establish the work of our hands. And the psalm begins, if you put it in reverse and go back to the first few verses, it begins by describing some aspect of creation. Verse 2, for example, before the mountains were born, you gave birth to the earth and the world. Now that's interesting for Moses to be writing that, because Moses is probably the one who wrote Genesis. Would he be familiar with the account of creation? Yeah, he would. And he's describing it and summarizing it right there in verse 2. Moses also in Genesis described the creation of man, Adam being formed out of the dust of the earth. So in verse 3 he says, you turn man back into dust and say, return, O children of men, back into dust. Knowing that God is the one, Yahweh, Jehovah God, is the one who created man from the dust. And then we have, as we move through Psalm 90, we have a common image of God in verse 7, 9, and 11. Verse 7 says, we've been consumed by your anger, and by your wrath we have been dismayed. 9 says, for all our days have declined in your fury, and we've finished our years like a sigh or a moan. What was the other one? 11, who understands the power of your anger and your fury according to the fear that is due you? So that's a common image of God, isn't it? That he's some angry, grumpy, mean troll in heaven just looking for an opportunity to punish us as soon as we do something wrong. Right? His sole desire is to destroy us, really. Wrong picture, folks. Wrong picture. He is a God of judgment. He's a just God. But as we'll see in a little bit, His love is going to be the other side of this whole story. Don't cheat. Don't read that. Don't find that verse yet, but we'll find it. We need to ask ourselves, when we read those three verses I just read about His anger and His wrath and His fury, what's the context there? Look at verse 8. What stirs His judicial wrath? It says, you have placed our iniquities before you. Right? Our secret sins in the light of your presence. There's what brings his judgment, is our iniquities and our secret sins. It's not that He's mean and awful and ugly. It's that we have transgressed. He's a holy God. We as creation end up being unholy through our transgressions. And being a just God, He has to take care of those sins and transgressions in some way. That's what we tend to forget. We're in a fallen state. Mankind is in a fallen state, and the best years in 10 are trouble and sorrow, even in our best years. So when our years end with a sigh or a moan in verse 9, and our years wither like grass. Do you see what verse that's in? I'll help you. 6. Our years end with a sigh and a moan. They wither like grass. Our days quickly pass away in 10, and we fly away. Really, folks, we should regard that as a blessing. Considering the type of days that we are in, the days that are just filled with sorrow and distress because of mankind's transgressions against the Lord, they become those kind of days. So it's really a blessing that our years aren't drawn out for centuries and centuries and decades as individual lives. You see what I mean? There's a memorable picture in Ecclesiastes 12, verses 1 through 7. And our seasoned citizens this morning can relate to that. It's beautiful poetry, and the writer uses inanimate objects to describe our life, specifically our bodies. Things like using the almond tree to describe the white hair. The windows, which would be our eyes, they grow dim. The grinders cease, that's the teeth. The strong men are back. We begin to stoop. The keepers of the house, those are the hands, they tremble. So folks, that picture up there, do any of you relate to that? Reuben. But Reuben, at 20 years ago, or 15, I had many people in this group look at me and say, "You just wait. You just wait. You're going to be aching, stupid, hurting." We have a go-to-the-doctor appointment ministry here in Mount Vernon, don't we? Everybody's calling up on everybody, saying, "When do you go? Do you need a ride?" Great picture of our lives right there. And it's described in Ecclesiastes 12, and boy, can we relate to it. The younger may not be able to relate to it, like Reuben, cannot relate to this, and like I couldn't when I was younger. I'm beginning to see it more clearly day by day. But the younger need to do something, and they need to ask the Lord in Psalm 90, verse 12, "Teach us to number our days." Why? Why should we number our days? In order that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Part of that wisdom is in Ecclesiastes 12, verse 1. Remembering your Creator in the days of your youth. Remember who put you here. Remember what His purposes are and make them your purposes. Is really the conclusion of Ecclesiastes. Is that a fair conclusion? Amongst some other things. Remember. Let's go. Let's take our example at the beginning, Mr. Douglas. Here he's 90 years old. This was in 2006. He's pointing at the cleft in his chin. That's a young picture of him. He's pointing at it. See, so even he's making fun of cleft in his. That's when he's 90. This is last year. He's at the Golden Globes Awards. That kind of looks like this guy here, doesn't it? We kind of get pruny when we get older. Isn't that what he looks like? Kind of looking like a prune. I'm feeling sorry for him. He's 100, this was last year, so he's 101. He's turning 102 this year. Isn't that amazing? Do you think I doubt he's a believer, but do you think about whether he thinks about his legacy and what he's leaving behind? What does life mean? What will your life have meant? Do you think he ever thinks about that? What's my life meant over the past 102 years? I don't think any of us are going to be able to say that. I'm not going to make it to 102 that I know of. You think I will? 80 plus year career. He's probably in film at least that long. It's like a vapor. He's accumulated, as far as I can tell by reading, perhaps $60 million. That's his net worth, I think. This guy and other celebrities are like that. Is this guy going to leave it to his children? Probably. Has this guy been engaged in charity work? Is he a philanthropist? I don't know. I'd have to read more up about him. Are people going to remember that in a few years? Hold that thought. We're going to get to that. Let's get back to this idea. This is our second point. What will your life have meant? Ecclesiastes 2, 20 to 23. We're going to read here in a minute. I mentioned the word legacy. We talk about legacy a lot. The definition of that is a gift by will of money or personal property, a bequest. So, what do people leave when they leave a legacy? It's usually things, isn't it? It's usually something physical. Something physical is usually what's left. Some leave buildings that they've designed or maybe they built. Some leave art. Some leave a large family, lots of descendants. Some leave money. Some leave money to charities. Some leave some sort of philosophy. Some leave music. You know, so there's three famous guys that always pop up: Beethoven, Mozart, Bach. Their music lives on more than 50 years, hasn't it? It's lived on quite a while. Some leave books behind. But you know, after 50 years, after 100 years, people are going to say, look at something and say, who built that? Actually, most of us look at that and we don't care who built it. We just look at the building. We don't even ask who built that or who wrote that or who did that. Very few things will be remembered after we are gone, brethren. Very few things we do will be remembered after we're gone. Nothing, and we'll prove this with Ecclesiastes. Go ahead, Mo, read Ecclesiastes 2, verse 20 to 23.
This is referring to the futility of labor.
Yes.
Therefore, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with them. This, too, is vanity and a great evil. For what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days his task is painful and grievous. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity.
Yeah, this is vanity. This is empty. There's nothing. It's like smoke disappearing. There's nothing you can hold on to. There's no permanence to it. And it's sad, isn't it? We work and labor and work and labor and leave it to someone. How does he word that? Gives his, and it uses the word legacy there, to one who has not labored for all of this. Like my descendants. And some of those descendants will blow it and lose it, won't they? It'll be gone. All is vanity. All is vanity, says the preacher. Boy, oh boy. Nothing that man builds with his hands has any permanence to it. So there's two things here. Very few things that we do will be remembered, and nothing that we build and make and create and manufacture with our hand has any permanence to it. Good example is a tower. Actually, there's two towers here. Lots of steel, lots of concrete, and how long did it take to bring them down? Few hours, somebody said. Yeah, those two don't exist anymore. A new home. This would be a style in the Middle East. I can tell because the license plate, there's a long, skinny license plate. It's probably in Israel somewhere. I think that's a drawing anyway. Only Carm likes this style. But, you know, it's a new home. It's a new home, and after a while, what happens to new homes? They not only change their style, they get old. Yeah, I visualize, if I was on the street there looking at that house, I can hear the sound of children in the backyard, you know, playing, and the smell of apple pie coming out of the windows there. Maybe wood smoke coming out of the chimney. It was full of life, right? But time goes on, and even things like this, they get abandoned, they get old and creaky and fall apart, and they're abandoned. Yeah. A new car, shiny, new, lovely. Take it out for a drive. But it doesn't take long before it gets a scratch. Yeah, that's a scratch. Car's newness seems permanent until the first scratch or crunch. Homes seem permanent when they're new, but they fall apart, don't they? And towers and buildings and bridges usually seem permanent, but they eventually crumble. So, people, we got to think about that. You can be a celebrity and a film, have a film legacy, and you'll be remembered for a while, but take 200, 300, 400 years down the road, is anybody going to remember Kirk Douglas? Daniel says, no, probably not. They're not going to remember him. Are they going to remember me? Absolutely not. Not in 5 years after I die. Moses understood what was important. This last week, I was reading a post on Facebook from my aunt, A-U-N-T, Sandy. It's my sister's, my mom's sister, one of them. And she's been battling cancer the past few weeks, months. And I think she was referring to her third treatment. And on Facebook, she said, "I had a weak in the knees, tears in the eyes moment last night when it truly hit me that I was having another treatment today. It didn't last long, this weak in the knees moment, but sent my mind on search for inner strength again. This past 2 weeks' recovery on this latest treatment was slow, and I never quite got those better days that I had after treatment two. Praying and looking at Scripture over and over, I read many that encouraged me. And one that encouraged her was Exodus, Exodus 33:13-17. If you want to turn there with me. Keep your finger in Psalm 90. Exodus 33:13-17. This is Moses speaking to Yahweh, Jehovah God. He says, "Now therefore I pray you, if I have found favor in your sight, let me know your ways." The context here is Moses is with the sons of Israel. They're out of Egypt. They'll eventually be headed towards Canaan. "Let me know your ways that I may know you." Now, plug that in the back of your mind. Let me know your ways. That's how we know the Lord, folks. That's true today. "So that I may find favor in your sight. Consider, too, that this nation is your people." So it's not just me, Moses says, that I'm requesting your favor, but for your nation, your people. And he said, so Jehovah's answering Moses, and he says, "My presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest." Then Moses replies, "If your presence does not go with us, do not lead us up from here." Do you see what Moses is saying? We don't even want to go anywhere. We don't want to even start out on our journey if you're not going to go with us. He's really pleading for the Lord to go with him and his presence be with him. Don't lead us from here if you're not going with us. "For how then can it be known that I found favor in your sight, I and your people? Is it not by you going with us, so that we, I and your people, may be distinguished from all the other people who are upon the face of the earth?" He knows they're a chosen people and that he chose his forefather Abraham through faith. And Moses is saying, demonstrate that you've chosen us and that you're, by going with us, demonstrate that we truly are your people and go with us, please. And the Lord said to Moses, "I will do this thing of which you have spoken, for you have found favor in my sight and I have known you by name." And quoting from my Aunt Sandy again, she says, "Knowing he promises to be with us is comfort in itself. Even greater comfort is God's answer to Moses. I will do this thing that you have spoken, for you have found grace in my sight, and I know you by name." She goes on to write, the accumulative effect shows itself. She's talking about her cancer treatments. The accumulating effect shows itself each time, and I'm prayerful that God will go with me, as in the days of Moses and the Israelites, and that his grace will be with me because he knows me by name. She's a believer. She's a child of God. And we say she's facing death right now. Well, really, we're all facing death. She's facing it, how would you say it, in a more tangible way, because she's fighting something that's real and urgent and immediate. She gets it, doesn't she? Spend your 70 or 80 years. That's verse 10, Psalm 90:10. Spend your 70 or 80 years with your eyes on eternity. Brittany Culp has a friend, a nurse friend, who, did she go into surgery on Thursday or Friday? Friday down, she rushed down there to Virginia Mason, Providence. And she had a ruptured bowel, she had surgery, but then she went unconscious and did not come out of it. She died yesterday. She was 46.
She wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. She probably wasn't expecting that. Her friends, like Brittany, weren't expecting that. Her family. 46. Poof! And Moses says, here, we might live 70 or 80 years. Poof! That's still poof, right? Life is a vapor. Spend your 70 or 80 years with eyes on eternity, brethren. Why? Because that's where moth and rust can't destroy. Matthew 6, 19 through 20. And folks, I want you to think about something for a minute. Let's say that you spend the rest of your life, you eat and you sleep, but the rest of your daytimes are spent doing what's mentioned in Matthew 25. And you do this towards those that are in Christ and those that are outside of Christ, those that are unbelievers. Whenever you see somebody hungry, you give them something to eat. When you see them thirsty, you give them something to drink. When you see a stranger, you invite them in. When you see them naked, you clothe them. And when you visit, when they're sick, you visit them. And when they're in prison, you come to them and visit them. Let's say you do that for the rest of your life, those good works, and you die. In 50 years, will people remember what you did? Maybe some. How about 100, 200 years? Not even those kind of good works. Not even showing love to mankind will be remembered by other human beings, but who does remember that? Who does, Daniel? Who's going to remember those? He's going to remember your love. Good works will be forgotten by mankind, but not by God, not by the Lord. Why will He remember your good works? Will He remember those kind of good works? Because He knows you made a purchase plan for heaven. He's keeping track and you've bought your way into heaven with those things? No. No, no, no. It's because you have found grace and favor in His sight and He knows you by name. You have demonstrated trust in Him by loving others. And He will go with us. He gives permanence to your works because you know what, folks? Love continues. Isn't that what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13? Notice what he says in Psalm 90 here, verse 13. Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love. There's the other side of God's characteristics, His unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all of our days. Folks, there's what gives permanence to our works, is loving Him and loving others, and His love abiding with us. Now, and those things last into eternity, amen? The fruits of the Spirit, especially love. Don't let this world drag you down. Set your minds on the things that are above, not on the things that are on the earth. Colossians 2. Or 3, verse 2. Any of you here have a desire to give permanence to the work of your hands? You need to belong to Him. You need to take on His name. Right? And He will go with you. We can show you and help you and teach you how to do that through His Word, not through what we've made up. If you want to respond to the invitation of Jesus Christ in that way, please do so. Let's stand and sing the song Selected.